Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Welcome back, my friends, once again to Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 86 for April the 7th, 2015. I'm your host, Jack, and I'm going to help guide you through all this magical world of networking, fiber optics, switches, servers, maybe a little bit of Linux here and there. Who knows? Maybe. Maybe a little bit about Apple servers. We talk about that every now and then. But sit back, relax, and enjoy this show about all things connected. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Check out all the great tech shows from a lot of my hosts, a lot of my friends who are hosts at techpodcast.com. Folks, we're also syndicated across Stitcher.com. That's STITCHER.com, where you can pick up Tech Podcast as well as every other genre under the sun. Download the app today on your smartphone. You can listen to this show and many, many others. Either Android or iOS. Folks, if you have a minute, please check out my website. I'm always happy that you go over there and just see what's going on. Sometimes I put links for like show topics or stuff on there. If nothing else, just stop by and maybe post a comment and say hello. You can do that at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. That's tipsfromtheserverroom.com. You can also leave me a voicemail, and that's how we got these two fantastic comments and questions this evening. You can do that at 724-701-0550. Once again, folks, that's 724-701-0550. If you have any questions or, ideas for future shows, you may want to, maybe you don't like to use voicemail, right? A lot of people don't even want to call anybody anymore. We want to text everybody. But you know what? Drop me an email at jackstechcorner@gmail.com. And you can also follow me on Twitter and as at Technoman. Many of you have done that. And when you do that, when I post a new show, you immediately are notified on Twitter. Says, hey, there's a new show available. And you can go and listen or listen in your car the next day. So tonight's beer, I haven't brought this to your attention here in many, many shows. I start out every week and people have emailed me and said, Jack, how come you never mention the beer you're drinking at night? Because most people know that as I'm recording this podcast, I'm using having some kind of beverage, either a nice cold brew or maybe a glass of wine. But tonight, I'm having a good old-fashioned Coors Light. Yep, believe it or not, no craft beers tonight, just a good old-fashioned Coors Light. And the reason is trying to cut the calories back. You know, it's getting to be swimsuit weather out there, and I'm getting ready. I don't want to be in the backyard and be in your swimsuit and neighbors see you and be like, whoa. Who's that guy came out of that house? Because they don't see you all winter long. And next thing you know, you come out and you're 20 pounds heavier. So, yep, Coors Light it is, 106 calories per can. Cans are a little bit, I don't think it's less calories in a bottle. But, hey, it comes in a 30-pack, so why not pick up some of that today? So I hope you're enjoying a cool beverage when you're listening to this show. But if you're driving to work, I hope not. Okay, enough commentary. Let's get on to tonight's show. Tonight's show is going to be brought to you by two great voice messages, and it brings to you some really great topics that we need to listen to and that we need to, pick up on because it helps when you guys ask the questions. It brings this show into a more three-dimensional type of show where you can actually hear other people's voices other than mine dragging you on as you're driving through the streets of Minneapolis, Chicago, Texas, Denver, wherever you may be. Now, first, we're going to be looking back at one of my past shows. And in my past shows, Martin's going to bring to your attention something in the form of work groups. Now, you may remember Martin. He is the one of the hosts at Geeksters, another great podcast. So let's go ahead and let Martin take this away.
Hi, Jack. This is Martin Obando, host of the Geeksters and owner of Obando Computing. I was just listening to your last show regarding domain controllers and workgroups, and I don't remember hearing this, so if you did mention this, I apologize. the fact that in a domain controller, you know that you have one central authentication server, so you need one username and one password. Where in a work group, a lot of times if you are sharing data, you need to authenticate against the other computer, so every computer has to have a duplicate of your username and your passwords. And if you change your passwords, you need to change that on all of the computers in your work group. So wanted to just bring that up. I don't remember hearing about that. If you did, then just delete the message. But thanks for the great shows, Jack, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Okay, Martin Evando from the Geeksters. Thank you so much for calling in there. Martin's definitely a friend of the show, and he calls in quite often, and I do appreciate the feedback. So what Martin was talking about here is we discussed this a while back. We had a caller say, you know, what's the difference between a domain controller and a work group, standalone computer, more or less, we used to almost call that peer networking. Computer to computer to computer is kind of a work group. Now, the one thing with the work group you have to remember is it's limited to 10 connections, where domain controllers can have multiple connections. Martin brings up that point that I may or may not have brought up in the past about the authentication server. Now, a domain controller, we know, has Active Directory on it. That Active Directory operates as your centralized authentication server. So when, you know, you put user accounts in and when they log onto the computer, it says, what domain are you connecting to? And they connect to your domain controller. So you don't have that in a work group. So what Martin is telling you is, you have to manage, let's say if we have 8 workstations tied together, you have to manage 8 separate, your user account 8 separate times is what he's saying, because there's not a centralized authentication server. And that makes a lot of sense. So each computer you have to go to, and you have to put Joe, Bob, Jim, Sally, Susie, Lisa, Becky, and, Cher, whoever. And you have to put their passwords on that computer. The next computer you go to, you have to do the same thing. If you are sharing resources from that computer, okay, make sure you understand that. So if you don't have to do that if your users are not sharing anything. Let's say if you have one central work group computer, okay, you're going to say that's my server, and all your shared file folders are on there. You have to have all those user accounts on there because you're using that computer's resources. But if you're using, if you have a shared file folder on each person's computer and you want everybody to access those shared file folders, then Martin's exactly right. That's what he's talking about. Your user account information has to be on every one of those computers. Now, this is not the best way to do this. I've consulted on a lot of projects out there for a lot of companies that could not afford a server. And folks, that happens. There's times you go into a business and they say, look, we can't afford a server. And I don't know if I told you a story or not, but I'm going to reflect back on this one. One time, myself and an old business associate, this was years ago, and I'm going to tell you how long ago, because if you remember the name E-Machines, and now we're going to get into this. So we go to work at this, it was a Pony League baseball organization, right? So it was a nonprofit organization that took care of a Pony League baseball in our area. And they wanted to put in new computers, and they wanted to put in a server. And they said, look, guys, you know, design this system for us. You be our consultants and tell us, what do we need to build this system? And we said, hey, piece of cake. So we went back to the office, sat down. We pulled up Dell's website. We started looking at Dell's workstations. And folks, you don't have to use Dell. I prefer it because it's a reputable company. And I know HP is too, blah, 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 but I've been working with Dell for so many years. I know where their support is. I know where their drivers are, and I just know the company. Now, here's the trick with Dell if you've never dealt with them. If you buy the Inspiron system, okay, the Inspiron is ordinarily the home system from Dell. So if you buy the Inspiron system, you're going to get whatever comes off that line. They have a big stack of motherboards. They have a big stack of network cards. They have a big stack of sound cards. Okay, let's just say a big stack, 50 of each. They start running the line, their assembly lines. Guess what happens at number 52? Even 51. You're right. It's a different motherboard. It's a different sound card. It's a different video card. Those systems are built for the normal home user. Those are not built for you in business. Because in business, we want to buy the Optiplex line. Okay, the Optiplex line is the business workstation. The reason we want to buy the Optiplex line, because you know every, let's say a Dell Optiplex, I'm just going to throw a number out. A Dell Optiplex 900 or 909 or whatever it is. Every single 909 that comes off that line will have the exact identical perfect parts in that computer. So what happens is down the road, something happens, you have to reload the computer and you go to get the drivers. Just do this. Go to Dell's website support and check on Inspiron. Click on network. There'll be guaranteed at least 5 different network drivers. You know why that is? Because they use 5 different network cards, okay? So this is all tying into my story. So we go back with the Dell Optiplex line. We say, look, this is what's going to cost you. No, I don't know what it was at the time. Maybe $1,000 per computer. This was a while ago, so computers cost a little bit more. $1,000 per computer, LCD monitors, da-da-da-da-da. And he said, well, okay, let us kick that around. Let us take it to a board meeting, and we'll see what we want you guys to do. We said, okay, that's fine. So we left it with them. And what we did, we always let the client order the computers on their own because it didn't tie our credit up. We tied their credit up with their computers. We didn't have to worry about paying for the stuff and then getting our money back. So what we did was we said, look, this is what's going to happen. Here's the layout of the computers. And we left. So we get a call back. We don't hear anything for about a month. Finally, the chairman of the organization or the CEO, whoever it was, calls us back, says, look, Two Guys Computer Company, whatever our name was at the time. I'm ready to go with this stuff, and I want to get this stuff organized, and I want to get this set up. We bought the computers. If you guys can come up and set them up and start running the network cable, and hey, we're ready to go. So we get to the organization. We schedule a Saturday. We go to Saturday morning because we knew nobody would be there. The CEO or whoever let us in. And we said, well, where's the Dell boxes? He goes, no, those are the computers I bought right there. It was 8 E-machines that he bought from Walmart for like $250 or $300 a piece with the LCD monitor. And at the time, it was like a 14-inch LCD monitor, maybe a 15. We're like, you got to be kidding. He said, no, these are the computers I bought. These are computers. They look just like the computers you were buying. They're black and they're, really? Really? And we said, well, we thought you wanted a server put in. He said, oh, yeah. He said, I bought this E-machine right here. It was a $400 one, and that's going to act as our server. And we just both, like, shook our heads and about wanted to leave, you know. You don't have to do a job like that. We weren't on the hook by any means. We didn't sign the contract that said we will put in garbage if you want us to put in garbage. Because our name and our reputation was on the line for this particular job. When people come in, they're like, oh, who put your computer system in? Oh, you know, Two Guys Computers did it. And they used E-machines? People would think we were out of our mind. They would never hire us. But anyway, the end of that story was we did put the computers in. We did load Windows Server at the time. I don't know. It was probably Server NT or whatever. So it was a long time ago. We did load Server on that E-machine. It did function because Server is a software package we know. We want, you know, redundant hardware and everything. But if it's going to work for them, we put it in and everything worked. I don't know how long it worked because once we got paid for the job, we never ever was recalled. We never went back. So maybe it's all working great. So the end of the story here is if you're going to buy a server, and I would highly recommend a server for even the smallest organization, because of the controls you can have on there, stay away from the work group stuff. The work group is really, let's say if you're 2 people and you're running a real estate business out of your home, or if you're running a little landscaping company out of your home, you needed to do your QuickBooks or something on, maybe a little work group would be okay for that situation. But anytime you're going to hire outsiders to work in your business, you better have Active Directory and you better have some really good controls on your files. Let's just take this one step further and say you have a small little, we did some consulting work for a drafting company. And Mr. Drafter, let's call him Jacob. Jacob was designing bridges is what he was designing. Well, he was working for a small firm. And what happened was a larger firm called him and offered him a position and said, look, we're offering you a position. We would like to try to take some of the business from this small company you work for. So we want to hire you because we know you have the right contacts. Well, Jacob helped himself to the drawings that he did for the bridges, and the bigger company took those those consulting, those businesses over, and they sold the exact bridges that he got paid to design with that smaller organization because they didn't have locks on their servers and you know, proper permission set where he couldn't go in and just copy files anytime he wanted to. So this is stuff around that. I know we got a little bit off subject. Martin was more or less just talking about the work groups, but that's the whole situation about work groups and servers. It's something to put in the back of your mind, something you want to remember. Be very, very leery. Now, this next one, I think I got the right one queued up here. Let me see where we're at. Yeah, it's this one right here. So this next one, I got a voicemail about, and I'm going to play this one here from Daniel for you. I believe this is the right one. Let me see. Yep, it looks like the right one. And what he's asking about is setting up a computer and basically using it as a type of router. A type of router. Let's see if this is the right voice message.
Hi, Jack. My name is Daniel Sagwa. I follow you over the Facebook and join your group on YouTube. I have an issue with a server that I'm currently installing. I got DNS set up and DHCP set up. When I log in the users, I got IP address from the DHCP, but I don't get internet over the network, so I'm wondering if I have to set up NAT in order to get internet. So I appreciate it. You can give me a call back and somehow help me out with, if you don't mind.
Okay, so there we go. So Daniel has a problem, which many people have emailed me in the past with this problem. And I figured I'd bring it to the show and put this on the show here for you tonight, because I think this is a kind of a normal type problem, especially in smaller businesses. Smaller businesses want to get the most out of their servers. So what we tend to do is, instead of putting a proper firewall in, like a Cisco firewall or a, there's so many of them out there. I'm just most familiar with Cisco gear, or having a proper router put in there to route your internet into your business. People want to set that server up and kind of use that server as a routing place or as a hosting place. So there's multiple ways we can do this, and I'm going to go over a few of these that I think are some of the best case scenarios, some of the best practices for you if you're in this situation. Now, what Daniel said he did, if you listen to that, and some of it wasn't as clear as what I hoped the message would be, but that's okay. He set up a server. He set up Active Directory, so he has his users authenticating to the server. He has DNS set up, so DNS is set up properly on it. DHCP is set up properly because it's handing out IP addresses to the users, but the users have no internet access. Now, here is the problem, and we ran into this a long time ago with a client who was setting up something similar to this. But they were using, I can't remember the name. I know you guys remember it. Microsoft used to have a software firewall type thing, ISA or something. It was called some kind of security appliance, something software. I don't remember what the name was. It was tremendously difficult to set up. You would never set up on your Active Directory controller. You put a separate computer together. You build the computer as a router. You have the Microsoft software in there and use it as a firewall, but it was tremendously difficult. So I had the client buy a Cisco firewall instead. I set that up in about 20 minutes. By the time I put all the routing tables and created all the ACLs or the access control lists that I wanted to let in and out, and I had that thing running about 20 minutes. I mean, we beat our heads over that Microsoft thing. Anyway, here is the bottom line. The first thing you can do, and I know you have this, so the first thing I would test, Daniel, is do I have internet access on my server, okay? That's the first thing you want to know. So obviously, all your workstations are not plugged into the server. They're probably plugged into a switch, okay? At least I would hope. I hope nobody has hubs out there anymore. I hope we all converted to switches. So all this stuff is plugged into a switch. Now, the way you do this is there's a default gateway on your internet. Now, even if you're using DSL, okay, even if you break this down to the smallest, your home internet package, business is not much different than home, except we have it more secure probably than our houses. Unless you're my house, it's pretty secure here. And don't anybody try to hack me, because you'll probably get in anyway. Anyhow, so the way this would work is, let's say you're putting too much emphasis, Daniel, on your server, okay? And what I mean by that is you're thinking that that server is going to be your blocking port, your blocking part for your internet. And that's probably not true, okay? Probably your blocking part is, I would think it would be your default gateway. All right, so many people get this confused. Your default gateway, look at your server. If the server is internet access, and your default gateway is the IP address for your internal LAN side of your router or of your DSL modem or whatever it is. So first of all, look at that, okay? I think that would be a big help, because if you put that default gateway, you can either statically put it on your computers, or, Daniel, you have to put it into your scope. So when you set up your DHCP scope, it's going to go into, and there's a place in there that says more or other settings. And in there, you put your DNS settings. And this is another big problem. So put your DNS settings in there that your internet provider provided to you. All right, let me back this up. First of all, your first DNS setting, your first DNS IP address should be your DNS server or your Active Directory controller, whichever the case is. Your second DNS server could be the DNS server that your internet provider gives you, okay? The next thing you want to have in there, it will say default gateway. Make sure you put your default gateway in there. Check your IP addresses, and I would say if you're using Windows, go to one of your computers and do a command, you know, go into a command prompt and type ipconfig space with a backward slash ALL for all, hit enter. It's going to tell you your IP address, your DNS servers, and your default gateway. Make sure that default gateway is your router, okay? Because to get to the internet, you don't have to go through your server. The server really doesn't do anything at that part for the internet, unless you're into this next scenario that I'm going to give you guys. But right now, we're just saying your router is plugged into your switch, and when people want internet access, they will hit the switch and go out of your router through the default gateway, and boom, they're on the internet. If they want to get to your server, they'll hit the switch, go through the IP address, and they'll get their file shares or printers or whatever they want to get off your server. That is the way a typical network works, okay? What it does is it keeps a lot of that strain off of your domain controller. That domain controller is already doing a lot of work, folks, right? It's authenticating users. It's looking up DNS routing. It's handing out DHCP. It's handing out IP addresses to people. It may be operating as your print server. So that domain controller is doing a lot. Many companies that I've worked for, well, not many, a few companies that I've worked for that had the workstation scenario, wanted to set up a basic, more or less a basic software firewall using a computer. Now, when we do that, Daniel, if you want your traffic to go through your domain controller, which is dicey at best, what you would want to do is, very simply, put two network cards in your server. And I mark one network card. You know how you can name them? Mark one network card as out. We know that's the WAN port. That's the port going to our internet connection. And mark the other, and what I mean by mark it, you can rename your NICs. In network properties, rename the other one as in or inside. That way we know that everything plugged into that card is on the inside of our network. If you do that, what happens then is that server becomes your default gateway. So in fact, your DNS can be, let's say, 192.168.1.1, and your default gateway can be 192.168.1.1. Because it's essentially that computer is the gateway. So when people come through your NIC and they hit your server, they're not going through the server. They're getting their Active Directory. They're getting their DHCP. They're getting their IP address. They're looking up their DNS routes. And next thing you know, they're routing outside that computer. Now, that is a big issue because if the Active Directory domain controller, if the server goes down, so does your internet connection. Maybe you want that to happen, maybe not. I don't know your situation there. It's my belief that if a domain controller goes down, and let's say I'm using Google Apps or I'm using Office 365 for my clients, I still want them to have internet connectivity because they can still do their email, they can still work on their documents, right? Maybe they're doing those online now, they're in the cloud, they're not doing them on the server anymore. So at that point, I want to make sure they still have internet connectivity. So I would make sure I route them out of my router or out of my firewall or out of my DSL modem. So hopefully, I don't know how you're all set up there. I don't know your situation, but that's two of the best case scenarios for you. And I hope that makes sense. And it's very, very easy to set that up. Now, if you're going to use, and I know Mike Smith, I don't know if you guys listen to the Mike Tech Show with Mike Smith. I know I listen to it pretty religiously. And he talks about a software firewall. I don't know the name of it. Maybe if somebody can email me, maybe I'll bring it to you in the next show. That's free. It's an open source one. It works kind of like a Linux kernel. And if you're afraid of Linux, don't worry about it, because when you set those up, it'll give you an IP address, and you just go to a web browser and set all the pass up, the ins, the outs, you know, the allows, the disallows for a firewall application. And again, you would have two NICs in there, one on the inside and one on the outside. You set that up, and that's your firewall. So that's a very good solution also. But if you can afford it, even if you're a small business, buy yourself a Cisco 5505, and, you know, you'll be set. You'll be good to go. So I think we use a Cisco 5500 or something, or a Cisco 5005. I don't remember. Anyway, it's a bigger Cisco, because the more users you have, folks, the bigger firewall you need. Why is that? Because you want the throughput. So don't put this firewall. I mean, if you have a good sized organization, and I'm talking good size, 100 people, 100 workstations, don't put this on an old E machine and expect you to get really good bandwidth results out of it, because what's going to happen, that's going to be your bottleneck. Everything we do in the technology world, and I could probably do a whole show on bottlenecks. I've worked with the scenarios so many times over my lifetime. A bottleneck is anytime we have a huge amount of data going through a one-lane traffic road. So think of that. Think we have 20 lanes of traffic going through one lane, and all the cars slow down. Data's not that much different. All the data's going somewhere, and you hit an e-machine processor, and it goes wah, 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 right? You're not getting that speed you need to send that data out and to do all the NAT. You talked about, Daniel, NATing, network address translations. We talked about that in the past. It just doesn't have the warmth for that. So that's why you need a bigger firewall. So if you're going to build your own machine, you know, beef it up if you have a lot of users. If you have a few users, you can probably get away with that e-machine and be just fine. So, but then again, don't put on an Atom processor laptop and think you're going to be all right, because that would really stink. Anyhow, you guys get the idea. I don't want to pound this into the ground any longer. But Martin, thank you so much for your question for tonight's show. And Daniel, thank you very much. I hope I clarified what you need to know to get you more up to snuff there and get your internet connectivity to your users, because a user on a network without internet is like somebody at lunchtime without a sandwich, right? Very, very disappointed, to say the least. Folks, please remember, you've been doing a great job, and I thank you so much. Please remember to use my Amazon link. It greatly helps these shows out. They keep upping my web hosting fees all the time. And, you know, I don't know why. They're like, Jack, you're just using more bandwidth. I said, well, more people are downloading the show. That makes sense, because I keep these hosted on my own personal website. So the more you listen, now that's great. Keep listening. Keep telling people about this show and keep downloading as much as you want. But they're like, you're using a lot of bandwidth. And I'm like, I have a lot of listeners. So that's a good thing. But to do that, to pay for that, I need your support. And you support me very well by using my Amazon link. Just go to tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Deactivate your ad blockers, because I know you have them on your computer. Man, the whole internet looks a whole lot different if you don't have ad blockers. So I know you have them. Turn them off for my website. and use my Amazon link. Whenever you buy anything, this is the time of year, start buying car wax. You're buying your new motorcycle helmets from Amazon. You're buying some rain gear. Maybe you're buying some boots. Maybe you're going to buy some gardening tools. Whatever. Whatever you buy. Go to tipsfromtheserveroom.com and use the Amazon link and then save it as a favorite. So whenever you buy anything, you remember to use that and click on that link to get to your Amazon. Now, folks, if you listen to these shows and you go, man, you know, I want to learn more about servers. I want to know more about that server stuff. And, you know, maybe, just maybe out of the outside influence, Jack can help me out. And I want to, folks. I created some wonderful classes. If you want to learn Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows Server 2012 R2, or VMware ESX 5.5 server to virtualize your computers, your servers, from install to administration, sign up for one of my easy-to-follow, easy-to-use, and you're a lifelong subscriber once you subscribe to these courses. Go to tipsfromtheserveroom.com, look at the online class link at the top of the page, and click on the course you want to sign up for and register. Folks, they're very inexpensive, and I don't hide anything. They're $250 for the course, and that's from beginning to end. There's no hidden fees. I don't charge and say, well, you got to pay $500 for the book. You got to pay $250 for the book. You got to pay, you know, $40 to take this exam at the end of this. No, folks, that's not the way I do things. You know, I've been teaching these courses for years, and, you know, they're there for you to learn. It's my way of paying it forward. That's why I made them so inexpensive so everybody can afford to take these courses. Even if you're a server administrator now, you may want to take the course to get beefed up on it and remember some of the stuff that you may have forgotten. Most of the employers out there have been paying for this course for folks. Once you're done, I do mail your certificate in the mail. So sign up for that course today. Don't wait. Do it right now. As soon as you sign up, you can take it. So if you're listening to this and it's 3 o'clock in the morning and I'm in bed, take my course anyway. You'll be ready to go. Go to tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Folks, as always, I hope everybody has a great work week this week. Hope your servers are humming along. Hope your workstations are, you know, just banging away. And I hope that your users are just having that greatest user experience in the world with your wireless, with your networking connections, with your fiber optics, with your servers. And folks, if you have any questions, make sure you get those into me. Use that voicemail line. It's great to have your topics and your questions coming through. Once again, as a reminder, it's 724-701-0550. Have a great day, great night, great weekend. And I'll talk to you next Tuesday on another Tips from the Server Room. You just listened to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserveroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.